Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. Inspiring stories that change lives. Where ordinary heroes tell their extraordinary stories of how they have triumphed over unexpected challenges. This is where we say what can't be said and use the AAA formula for freedom. Awareness, acceptance, and action. Now, here's your host, Hillary Burns.
Hello, this is Hillary Burns, and welcome to another episode of the Getting Real with Hillary Show. And I am so happy today. This is going to be a wild 55 minutes with my really good friend, Gloria Waldman. Gloria, all right, if I start crying, my nose will run the entire time. So I get verklempt very easy, Gloria. But so anyway, Gloria is amazing. I mean, she just told me she had 19 careers. I know she's got a PhD. She's written books. She sings, she dances. So I'm going to let Gloria tell us all about her life. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to hear it because I've never really heard it. I mean, she is just so inspiring. You know, she's bold, she's courageous, she's talented, she's beautiful, she's intelligent, she's ambitious. I mean, there's just so many things I could say about her, but of course now I'm crying. So I'll be sniffling the whole time, Gloria, and it's your fault. I'm just kidding. So welcome, Gloria. Thank you so much for being here. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. This is like a dream come true for you. I know that. And So I think if I think of who I am, also I realized I forgot to put my eyeliner on. Do you think that's okay, Hillary?
I love it, but this is getting real. So
my people, I know. I love it. But I think it's that I'm unstoppable. I used to say, well, I still say, no is a point of departure. Hmm. Now that doesn't, I'll tell you something, that works in real life. I was a professor for 40 years at York College, CUNY, of the City University of New York. So I taught Spanish, I founded these fields, you know, I'm a child of the 60s, you know, so we founded the fields of women's studies, Latin American studies, Puerto Rican studies.
They didn't exist before you started them?
Exactly.
Anywhere. Anywhere or just in that school?
No. This is so great, Hillary. That's such a great question. I started teaching in 1968. I was 21. 1968. So the women's movement, the anti-war movement, is all then. So I'm 21 years old, and I'm teaching out in Jamaica, Queens. The college is only 2 years old. It's part of City University, which includes City College, which you all know about, and Hunter College and Brooklyn College. You know, very important.
So you had graduated already.
I went to
school. How were you teaching at 21?
Yeah, you see how smart Hillary is. She captures everything.
Like five grades?
Yes, I did. I went to college at 15 and a half. That's ridiculous when I think of it now. Yeah.
Where did you grow up? In Queens?
I grew up in the Bronx. The Bronx, the Hague, the Netherlands, the Bronx, the Vatican. Only a few places with the.
My father grew up in the Bronx, so okay.
Really? I'm from 174th Street and off the concourse and Walton Avenue. Where'd your dad come from? Do you know? In the Bronx?
Popham Avenue?
Oh, Popham?
I don't know if that was later, but yeah. He was a science. He went to science. Bronx High School of Science. So he was very,
very smart. And I went to Taft High School.
Okay.
Which is near the courthouse in the Bronx. It's near Yankee Stadium.
So how many grades did you skip to go?
Well, here's where it was. Yeah.
Wow.
You did the SPs, what they called the special progress, so that you did 7th, 8th, and 9th, I think, in 2 years. And I also, you know, I don't have children, so I don't really know about this so much, but they used to say, your birthday is now, so you made the cut or you didn't. So I went to a kindergarten at 4 and a half. I was in kindergarten.
Okay. So there's 2 years right there.
There you go. So I was in, I spent my junior year in Spain, 1964. I was 17. Everybody else was like 19. So, you know, when I think of this now, when I was married.
Is that where you got fluent in Spanish? How did a nice Jewish girl from New York? get fluent in Spanish.
That's the way. That's the only way. Because I was a Spanish professor. You can't do it in a classroom. You have to live the experience. So this was 1964. Franco was still alive. I lived with una señora, you know, they would NYU would contact people who had women who had these big apartments. Now this is, you know, of course it's post-war.
But how did you get fluent before, were you fluent before you went to college? No. Okay. So what were you teaching? Teaching at 21. Okay. Got it. Teaching at
15. No. Yes.
You went to college.
My junior year at City College, I spent the whole year in Spain. That's how you become fluent. And the real way you become fluent is if you have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, then you really, they used to call them sleeping dictionaries. Then you really get to speak, because you see, when you go there, you can only speak literature. You can speak Unamuno, Valle Inclán, Ortega y Gasset. These are famous Spanish writers. But you don't know how to say, I'd like water. You don't even know how to use the right verb, you know, quiero agua, whatever. So that's how I got fluent. So when I got back, I went to Cornell for my master's.
Okay.
And I got my PhD at the City University of New York. And that was new then. You know, I realized how many things were new. Like, I was really part of exciting times, you know, anti-war, the women's movement. I'm at the beginning with Gloria Steinem. I know Gloria. I know Bella Abzug. I know, oh my God, the important people who founded that movement. Sheila Tobias, who died recently, she was academically important in introducing women's studies, which we did in Cornell. And we were fighters, you know. So there I was 21 when I started teaching. And, you know, no, wasn't going to take no for an answer. We were feminists. We started the women's movement. And we were the ones, my friends and myself, who started the women's movement academically. That was called women's studies.
And how did you start it?
Here's how you started. It's a good question.
You just say, hey,
it's a moment in time. Wait a minute. It's a moment in time. You have the Black Panther movement. Now, I wasn't involved in those movements, but the women noticed. The anti-war movement. It all started with the anti-war movement, I would say. In the anti-war movement, women noticed they were not being treated equally. They were the ones being asked to get coffee for the other people. So then the consciousness starts. Then you have Ms. Magazine, the first volume. Everybody kept their first volume, where you start talking about, I'd like a wife. I want a wife. I forgot who wrote that. Judy, somebody, Sayers. I want a wife. And that's the essay she describes. I want a wife. Someone who's going to be there for me, do this, do that, do the wash, do the laundry, cook. And we saw, this is the beginning of consciousness. That's not what we want. So then you start meeting. Now, I didn't belong to a consciousness group, but many, you know, remember they had consciousness raising groups, CR groups. Women would meet. They would talk about any issue they wanted. Abortion, women's rights. I mean, I'm trying to think. We fought. I remember being up in maybe 1970, 72 in Albany, fighting for, equal abortion rights, right? The women's controlling our own bodies. And somebody turned off the microphone. Somebody turned off Flo Kennedy, an African-American fabulous woman. Flo Kennedy was speaking and they turned the mics off, but then we got the mics back on. So how you start a movement, Hillary, I haven't thought about this for years. What a question. Is that people, you start thinking, then you start having groups, then all your women friends start talking, then there are people, I want to start crying because this is so moving, remembering what I'm part of.
Yeah.
Then you have people in academia.
This isn't nothing.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, academia. Somebody says, we have to bring this into the university. And then you start developing courses. I remember with my girlfriends, The Image of Women in Spanish Literature. Remember, I'm a PhD in Spanish literature. So we start looking, and there's no internet.
Did you have to go to the library?
I was going to say, you go to the book, you know, 42nd Street Library. I'm from the Bronx. I'm a New Yorker. I live in Stuyvesant Town, which is downtown. And it's, you know, when I got married, this is what they put. I was in the New York Times. My husband died, but this is what they put in the New York Times. And she has a rent-stabilized apartment in Stuyvesant Town. Only New Yorkers would think that that's like unbelievable. I live in my apartment for 54 years on the East River. This is, I'm just giving you a picture of what it is to be a New Yorker. $100 a month in 1968. My father, Harry Fineman, got me this apartment and you had to be on lists. He was a real estate assessor, so he could got me closer at the beginning. People were on the list for 20 years, 25 years, 30 years. There's no more lists. So this apartment is $1,000 now after 54 years.
A month?
If I ever left, which I never will, feet first.
Feet first.
It would be $5,000, my apartment.
I would leave.
An apartment in New York with all the windows.
How
on
big?
The
How many bedrooms?
One bedroom, thick walls, everything on the East River. I see
oh
the boats.
Oh, my God.
It's like every day I'm grateful. So. You know, there are many things as you hear, well, who makes me who I am? Grateful, unstoppable. It's not, I'm not bragging. It's just like, no, doesn't really exist. But here's the thing I want to share with my listeners.
Right, Gloria, just stop moving so much because it's shaking and getting dizzy, at least for me.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I know you're moving, but you like to talk, but I'm just,
very
I don't want to suppress you, but I'm just,
I can be still.
It comes in and out of focus. Yeah.
Oh, I can be still. Is this good now? I can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to suppress you, but I want it to be a good video, you know?
Yes. Absolutely.
So gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Absolutely. Oh my God. Absolutely. Yes. Because you know, I am a performer. We'll get to that also. So yeah. I move around a lot, but I can be very still. There's something about stillness, so I can do that. Great. So I was saying something.
Grateful, unstoppable.
Grateful, unstoppable, and yes, I was saying something important for our listeners and viewers. So not being able to get no does not work in a relationship. It works, in as I said, in the world of work. Like I know. You go to the person with the power. You don't waste your time complaining. This is all something I got when I was 31, 1978, when I did the S training, Werner Erhard's work. I got, you don't complain. You just go to who the person who's going to make the difference. If that means you just go to the president. It's a thing about really having confidence to just do that. So, but in, I'm just sharing with people because I'm also a life coach. In a relationship, if somebody says, no, I'd rather not do that, that's no. That you have to hear that or not, or there are consequences. Because otherwise it's nagging and trying to convince somebody to do something. It doesn't work. Then they're not happy. I know that from being divorced, you know, and also I know that. I know that now. And then, of course, you want to choose somebody who's a yes. Like my boyfriend right now, for the last 11 years, who I met through this work that we do in Landmark, is a yes. You want to get somebody, you want to find somebody who's a yes, if you're a yes. If you're both no's and you want to sit home, that's another thing. But if you're...
So, all right, we were back. Let's go back to the women's movement.
Yeah, so let's go back to the women's movement.
We've jumped into the whatever the century this is, but yeah.
Yes,
so just
yes,
tell
yes,
us a little bit. And, you know, so there you are creating the women's movement, Spanish literature, creating all this new stuff that never existed. I mean, that's mind boggling.
That is right. We created a field from where there was no field. So what's interesting is at the beginning, we started with the image of women in Latin American literature, the image of women. And we could see how they were portrayed basically by male authors. Then we started thinking, wait a minute, we got to find the women. Now, we knew there were some women writers always. Then we dug. This is the research from the 14th, 13th, 12th century, all the way up. We found the hidden. So we then there was a whole field called the hidden writers, the secret, you know, the women writers who nobody knows about. And that's what a lot of us started writing about. So we were PhDs and getting our PhDs, So if you want to hear about that, I could say one sentence, Hillary, because I think these things are useful, because things are not easy. It took 10 years to get my PhD. It was torture. I just want to tell people how the way you write a book, because I work on that, another field I came up with. I help people go from A to Z in writing their books. How do you do it? Extraordinary sacrifice. If you're a person who'd rather be out there dancing and singing and playing, there's a moment where you have to just sit down, be alone, and do what it takes. And you, of course, get a lot of support, but how you do any project like this PhD is you really get connected to why you want to do what you're doing. Like this book, let me show you.
And why did you want your PhD?
Well, more than the PhD, simple. If you're in the world of academia, you can go so far without a PhD. And I was writing on Latin American theater. Really, I was writing on Puerto Rican theater. I was writing on the author, Luis Rafael Sanchez, who is alive and kicking in Puerto Rico. Oh. And I needed this to have credentials, you know. But then, of course, I'm totally connected. I write about theater, you know, and I love and the live theater. Just an example, plays I've read. One play I didn't like so much. But then I saw it put on it in the theater, Spanish Repertory Theater, right down here in New York, if you're from Manhattan, on 27th Street between 3rd and Lexington. It's been around for 50 years. They did the play 40 years ago, and then it came to life. So I know everybody who watches this is smart, et cetera, but it's going from the page to the stage. It makes the difference. A play could be dead and boring on the page, but then, you know, then it comes alive. So this is this book here, Jose Papo Marquez. It's in Spanish. It's the life and work of this playwright who at one point he was my boyfriend, and he died, unfortunately, of AIDS in an area, you know, with drugs. Anyway, unfortunately, but he was fabulous. So this book got published 30 years after he died. My God, 20, 88, I don't know, 30 years. So it takes what it takes for you to sit down. It's an anthology. He's alive because of me. It's all his plays. It's all his artwork. He's alive because of me. It's every poem, everything ever written about him. And then this last
book.
No, my first book is I'd have to go to move for it.
That's okay.
I won't move. is my PhD, which is on Luis Rafael Sanchez. That's the first book. It's an analysis of his plays. And you know, that took 10 years to write. Books don't have to take that long, but maybe in those days, I know there are other ways to do it now, but there are other ways. But this came out, this is actually the size of a damn coffee table book. This came out during COVID. Now this is, I'm really excited about. This says, it's in Spanish, of course. It's my 141 articles. I was a journalist in Puerto Rico. That's what I wrote. You know, I write about Puerto Rico, 79 to 81. So think how many years later this book is. And this is.
So when was that? If you were a professor for 40 years, how do you do all these other things in other places?
Very good. You see how she thinks it'll, because I took a sabbatical. And then I was a visiting professor from 79 to 81. Very good. I took a sabbatical, and then I was a visiting professor at the University of Puerto Rico.
Wow. And so that's when you wrote 141 articles.
I wrote for the newspaper, El Nuevo Día. This was the biggest newspaper in Puerto Rico. This is every article on every important person, every play for 2 years.
Wow.
So this is like, I am so proud of that. And, you know, it wasn't on the front burner because you see, I do so many other things, but I knew this is the book I had to write. And that putting it together, this incredible person who put it together, designed it, but it's every article I wrote. So that was, it took the time. And this has, this, I love, it has an index, 30 page index.
So why write the books? I mean, I'm just,
well, you know, first
get
of all,
out.
I'm a scholar. I'm an academic. So academics write articles. I've written many, many articles about women's studies, women writers from Spain, Latin America. Oh, very important book of mine. I should have had them all on the table. Well, we take a break when we come back from the break.
Yeah.
We take a minute. I'll show you my books.
Sure,
I wrote about, I wrote about feminism during the Franco years. I wrote interviews with Linda Gould Levine, my dear friend. We were in Spain together. This is a book of women who were brave during Franco. And if they, there was no divorce, they could have lost, but they left their husbands, et cetera. They were, you know, whatever, they weren't happy. There's no divorce. Can you imagine there's no divorce and your husband can take your children? When I'm thinking of it right now, it's like unheard of. So I interviewed those women, and then Franco, right after that, one of the most important persons, Lydia Falcón, she disappeared. She was arrested falsely with another feminist I wrote about, and we helped save them. Oh, I forgot to talk about this. 1974, I was on sabbatical. Ted Kennedy, Gloria Steinem, Bella Abzug all spoke up to get these feminists out of prison where they were falsely accused. Do you know what would have happened to them? The death penalty. Franco died. That's what saved them. I better not move. Franco died, and we got them out of prison.
And where were you then? Was that when you
were? I was in New York.
New York, wow.
But this is when you're part of an international movement. When I'm thinking about this, Jesus Christ, how do we do these things? Because of people together, a movement. I'm a political person.
Wow.
And we got them out of prison. Okay, I'll show you that book. And what else? That book. And then, I have a book, Contemporary Latin American Theater. That book people could read. It is out of print, but you could get it at the library. We translated. That's all in Spanish. What can I tell you? That's in Spanish. But I do have one book you can read. Argentine Jewish Theater by Bucknell. Yes, ma'am. Bucknell University Press. There, my girlfriend, Nora Glickman, an Argentine Jewish writer. Oh, turn the phone on. Nora, we'll just include it. Nora Glickman and I translated 10 plays of wonderful plays from Argentine theater with the theme of the Jews. Jews went to Argentina in the 1900s, and they are part of the literary movement, because of course Jewish people are part of every literary movement. So that is a book you all can get from the library. Argentine Jewish Theater by Bucknell University Press. A lot of books are out of print. What can I tell you? But let me see. Yeah, that's exciting. And think about living those years of the women's movement. And then we taught the courses. We brought it into the university so students could get politicized and consciousness raised. And those were years where I would be in a classroom of 100 something people. Then I would be in small seminars, but I was consciousness raising hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of students to know what they deserve, what their rights are, to be brave, to speak up. These are life-changing courses. And so I was part of.
Was this before you did the S training? You were already courageous, or did the S training?
That's a very good question. So I started teaching at 20 in 1968, when I was 21. So I did the S training when I was 31. And that pushed it even further. Let's put it that way. Yes.
So you were already out there.
I was,
you were,
that's the thing.
Causing stuff to happen.
Exactly. And I'm not one of those people who are always shy. I love those stories, but that's not mine. But I'll tell you what it gave me, though.
Really?
Yeah. but at 31, I got to be even more. That's where I got even more outrageous. That's where I saw absolutely nothing stop me. And that's the way I've lived now. That's 44 years ago. It's like nothing stops me. Like I could say, oh God, how am I going to do this? I mean, I have stickies all over. Oh my God, is my main thing. But then I just breathe in and make that phone call and dial and smile. You know, I just do what I have to. After you do the S training, you can't live with yourself if you don't do what you know is the next right step. Mm. Because you see what else? I'm always up to something big. That's the point. You know, I'm not living a small life. I'm up to, and you know, so it was the teaching. I'm retired, but I'm always involved. Look, 2008.
When did you retire?
I retired young. When I think of it, I retired.
Oh, at 61, right?
No, was I? I think I was younger. I think I was 58, something like that. Because I was, my husband and I, Norman Schwartz, we moved to Puerto Rico, and I tried to retire like four times. I couldn't. You have to be ready, because I was still. I retired because I was in a different life, and I'm so glad because he was 10 years older. Oh, he was extremely old. He was, what was I? I'm joking because I was 50 and he was 60, and that seemed old. he's super old, but he wasn't old. And we moved to Puerto Rico. I lived in Puerto Rico on and off for 20 years. Wow. On and off. I lived there. I was a journalist. I made films. I don't even know the things, all the little things I did. So Puerto Rico is such a part of my life, you know, my friends, the theater. We lived there for like 5 years till 2007, I guess. Yeah. Sometimes the years, that was a different iteration when we lived there together. When I lived there before, that's when I was a journalist. One of the many times I lived there, but what you asked is the question. The one,
yeah, now we're going to take a break in a minute. We're going to transition into your, it's unbelievable to me that you could also be a singer and a performer with all the other stuff you've been done, but that's where we're going to transition. And after the break, we're going to hear a song that Gloria performs, which is really exciting. So was Norman the one that passed away?
Yes. Norman died in 2007, and we were together it was 7 years. We were only married 7 years. Oh. And I just felt so complete because we moved to Puerto Rico because he wanted to, and he was handicapped actually, and we still did everything. And you know, his passing, what can I say? Life, it's very Jewish to say, you know, life continues. It's kind of like, it's an attitude, you know, it's an attitude about being open. I mean, widowhood, we're not going to talk about widowhood, but that's a thing. That's a horrible thing. Yeah. And it takes the time it takes. And it takes, in case anybody's listening, hate to tell you the news, at least 3 years before you make a lot of mistakes in between. But the fact is, until you kind of come to where that new space is for you. But you do.
All right. You so do. Gloria, so, I'm excited to hear your song. We're gonna have a quick break and then we'll come back.
Are you inspired? Are you living a life story you're proud to tell? Are you actively pursuing and creating the life of your dreams? Well, if not, you really need Hillary's AAA program for freedom. Just visit gettingrealwithhillary.com and schedule a time with Hillary today.
Feel so young, you make me feel like spring has sprung, and every time I see you grin, I'm such a happy individual. The moment that you speak, I wanna go play hide and seek. I wanna go and bounce the moon just like a toy balloon. You make me feel so young. You make me feel there are songs to be sung, bells to be rung, and a wonderful fling to feel the way I do today. 'Cause you make me feel so young.
Player is like the David Foster of Africa.
You and I, just like a couple of tots running across the meadow, picking up lots of forget-me-nots. You make me feel so young. You make me feel there are songs to be sung, bells to be rung, and a wonderful fling to be flung. And even when I'm old and gray, I'm gonna feel the way I do today. 'Cause you make me feel so.
All right, so Gloria. Oh, you were talking about, so.
I just want to show you what a life of the mind is. So okay. This is Teatro Contemporaneo, a series of Latin American plays, which the public wouldn't have. They could, you know, teachers can use it to teach. So that's why I write my books. Now this one you could actually get in English. Luisa Capetillo, look at this, pioneer Puerto Rican feminist in the 1920s, first person to wear pants. She was arrested in Cuba for wearing pants. This is a translation. Jorge Luis Borges. He's a very famous artist.
So just move it. Yeah, a little bit down. Go down. Yeah, better. Okay.
Okay. And he is was a very famous, here he is, Argentine writer, and never got the Nobel Prize he should have. And I translated with a friend, Ronald Crist, his essays on theater. This is the book I was mentioning. Tell me if I have it. Feminism During the Franco Years.
Up a little. Up. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. You see, wow. It's a fan with a boot on it. Great image of my girlfriend, Mary Lou Mayers. And this is my first, I don't think it's the first book, but anyway, Luis Rafael Sanchez, Passion, Theater Passion. He's a very important Puerto Rican writer. And this is in the most important theater in Puerto Rico. Great,
wow.
Right?
Wow. Okay.
All right. So
amazing. Okay. So I can't imagine being in that world, writing all those books, studying and just doing what you did with the movement. But now let's talk, because I know you're having an upcoming show. You know, here you had that life as an academic. How did you have time to sing and dance and do all that stuff? Or was that after you stopped?
No, always at the same time.
So when did that start? As a child?
No, I'll tell you. Yeah, very good question. So my mother played the piano, and we would love to gather around the piano, and she would play, and we would sing. My brother is 2 years younger, my brother Jules Feynman, and my sister is 10 years younger, Rhonda Feynman. And Rhonda actually went to the Berklee School of Music, so she took it seriously. And guitar, and even wrote music, and she lives in Belfast, Maine, and I think Hillary's going to do a Get Real with Hillary. My sister's fascinating, an acupuncturist, yeah, and a musician. But anyway, they have a radio show, which is fabulous. But I'm the one, so my mother would play, so we always sang. Then in 1982, this is a great story. I was actually at a conference at the Eugene O'Neill Center. So I always sang. Eugene O'Neill Center, and
where did you sing? Like choirs, or choruses?
Oh, or no. You know the truth, I never did that. I never sang in the high school choir. I never did any of that. I just sang at home. And before I tell you about that Eugene O'Neill thing, as an academic, we would go to conferences. And in the conferences, we'd be in hotels. And very often, there would be, you know, when I'm young, I'm in my 20s, a piano bar, you know, not a piano bar, a pianist. Mm. I guess a piano bar, playing the piano. And I just would sing with the pianist. And I realized it was the one moment in my life I was just completely there, you know, completely happy. you know, I'm writing, I'm a professor. I like, you know, I love teaching, but the writing is torture. You got the sense of it. I did all the books. I did them. But when I was singing, I was singing. So then I go to this conference, 1982, and they had a workshop with the Latin Americans on singing. And the people are talking and somebody's translating them. And they get to a point where I realize, hold on a second, this language is est. They're teaching. The person can't translate it because it's another language. They're not getting the heart of it. And I say, did you do the S training? Of course they all did. They were teaching from, it's called the Actors Institute here in New York. It was found, the Actors Institute was a branch of, well, it wasn't a branch of S, but the people who did the S training said they were taking this into theater and music, and they did. So I went to that. I went, as soon as the conference was over, I went to this institute. And I started to get voice training, but it's not just voice training. That was what I got from Barbara Christopher, a graduate who is my teacher since 1982. But then the other person, Ellie Ellsworth, she was teaching how to perform and how to be. And that's what the work is. Just being yourself and sharing. Why do I do this? I make people happy. I'm just, you know, I'm modesty apart. What performers do is you hear Barbara Streisand, you hear Bette. I've gone to every concert Bette Midler has ever done, but it's about joy and it's about people get happy and they forget their troubles. Come on, get happy. You know, they, so anyway, so I started studying and Barbara Christopher would have her class always perform, you know, do class, you perform after the class. And that's what started it. And then I would invite, actually my lives meshed. I would invite my students to my shows. They would come to my shows, and then I would, of course, also.
Oh, you mean your college students, not
yeah, my college students.
Your yeah,
my college. I only had college students. I always only taught college.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, they would come to watch me sing, and they would get all excited, you know. So I was always doing everything at the same time. I would even invite them to do, you know, est in those years. You know, they would come to introductions, etc. But in other words, my students. I never had children. I never wanted children. No plants, no animals, no children. So I can just be in my, well, think about that. Many people have children, but I'm part of the women in the women's movement. Sometimes people say, oh, we forgot to have children. No, we didn't forget to have children. We were just doing other things. It wasn't any pull. So my students, my family, my children, I know them. I have my students in 68 who are, you know, still my people. You know,
so you're still in contact with your students?
Of course I am. But think about it. I was 21. They were 19. It wasn't like they were young. I was 21. So over the years, we were the same age, pretty much almost. Isn't that weird? Then it changed. It wasn't the same age. But in those early years.
Yeah.
Yep. Those early years. I have a student who I am from. I forgot what year it is, but she was 19. She's 50. What is she? 53 now. She's, in other words, but the other ones were my exact age. They're in their 70s. And we're, you know, but that, let me tell you something. That's what the university was like then. We were all close.
There are no rules. You can't, you know, no rules.
No. You have to be, you know, appropriate, but no, these students, I was saying something about that. Yeah, I know. We politicized them in the 60s. They went, I don't know if you remember this, but people who are listening, my listeners here, there was marches against the Vietnam War, and the students went, this is the university students, went down to Wall Street, and the hard hats beat them up. 1970-something. My students.
Who were the hard hats?
Oh, the hard hats of the construction. They called them the hard hats of construction workers. They were construction workers. Oh, yes,
they beat them up?
Yes, they beat them up. Yes, they did. They beat them up. Yes, they did. And the students came back all upset. Some of them were politicized after that. Some of them were never political after that. Mm. And that was one day I didn't go with them. But the rest of the times I was with them, we were marching. And, you know,
it wouldn't have beat them up if you were there, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's so great. But, but you know, it's a big deal being in the anti-war movement in those years, you know? It's a mixture. So the point we're making is the singing, the politics, I'm part of the personal growth movement. Est is part of, you know, that started 71, part of the personal growth movement. Now we accept all that. Now, Oprah couldn't be Oprah without all the work we did before, the consciousness raising, you know, that's what we called it. So I guess I love talking about that. So the flow is, so then I always say,
you know, now you could think it was always the case, but you really were, you were a force that had it start. I mean, it's really amazing. Like we take it for granted now that,
exactly. So what I want you to see, I'm part of a movement. Mm. In other words, I'm part of the women's movement, and then including Latin American, Puerto Rican, Black studies in the university. Now, I want to go back for a moment. We had a fight for that. Do you think this was easy? You had to fight the curriculum committee. Not certain people were in agreement with you. But now remember, I'm 21, so most of the other professors are in their 40s. A lot of them are very political. They always were, you know, from a different era. But others said, no, we can't have this here, and we can't do this in the university, and what is this? And we fought it, and that's what being part of a movement is. We had strategies. We knew how to, the courses had to be super academic, and, you know, they were. You studied the works just like you studied any other work, but you're studying women writers. And people didn't think that was even important. Can you imagine? Now, you know, you have right now for my listeners, Isabel Allende wrote it just went out of my head what she wrote, but look it up fast.
If I could spell it, I'd look it up, but I
yes, yeah, that. Yeah. No, before we end, I'll tell you what you're, but and then movies were made out of it and of her.
So you started
House of the Spirits. It came to me. The House of the Spirits is a film with Meryl Streep and Jeremy Irons, etc. But in other words, all these people are now famous, but we brought them to light. Let me give you another example. Many people know who Frida Kahlo is. Frida Kahlo. Hold on, let me just show you. This is right here. But I got to be careful because, like Rachel Maddow, you know, remember Rachel Maddow isn't even dressed from the waist down. Right.
At least you have pants on. Okay. Ah.
So here, this is Frida Kahlo. You might remember her. You might know this image. A famous Mexican painter. Diego Rivera was her husband. Now she's more famous than Diego. This is just, I have millions and millions and millions of things about Frida. But so she did hundreds of pictures of herself, and she had an accident when she was 14. She had 54 operations. The point is, she painted her pain, her inner pain, everything she was going through. She was her subject. And so we discovered, my friends and myself, 1970 something, there was a book by Hayden Herrera called Frida. She's the one who brought Frida to light. You know who she is, right? Hillary, do you know who Frida is? You love her. But the point is, she's a cult. She died in 1954. Oh. And she's a, 54. And she's this Frida clothing. Everybody look it up. K-A-H-L-O. I'm being a teacher now. Frida Kahlo.
A-A-H.
Oh, there's a movie. Just see the movie with Selma Hayek.
Frida.
You got to see the movie. Frida. The movie did an excellent job. And Alfred Molina as Diego. That you will get a picture.
Would you say these people and all these Spanish writers and women were hidden until you unearthed them? You kind of unearthed them?
I would say yes, mostly yes. Until we, as a group, Women's Studies Association, women writers from Spain, all of us, the professors, the political people, I would say that. That's exactly.
And how did you create those groups? Because they obviously didn't exist before.
No. What I'm trying to explain, I want to make it clear. You know why? Because this is how you have a movement. Okay. You see, it's what you said. What are your three A's? Your
awareness, acceptance, and action.
Okay, so you go into awareness. So there got to be writers here. There have to be people. There can't not be. And then you discover Maria de Sayas, 15th century, writing about sex. And many, not just women, discovered these people. I'm just throwing out names. I'm throwing out names because I don't know who's going to be listening and who's going to be inspired. Juan Goytisolo, who died recently in his 80s, he wrote about this Maria de Sayas, who was a a writer in the 1500s. Can you imagine? And then, and so you get, you meet college professors, the women. It's the 60s. We're all in our 20s. Now we're going to go to someone's house and we're going to do this. And we're going to start sharing material. Somebody from California, Wisconsin, New York. It's a group. And then you have the people who really know how to organize and put it together. And then you have the bee workers who are going to do the research. Mm. And then you have those of us who are going to, we're all different people. Then we're going to bring it, we're going to get the courses in, or we start with bringing in different writers in our courses that we already have. Mm. We have courses that are just about this. It is very, very, very hard because you're dealing with people who never heard of this, who don't care. Like, let me give you an example of somebody my age, philosophy professor. He says, well, I'd be happy to include women, but I don't know who they are. So what do we have to do? We have to find in his field, women philosophers. We have to give it to him because he's not going to do it. We have to give the person, the people. And then within his philosophy field in history, there'll be women professors who are going to do that. Do you see? Wow. We create this whole thing. And then another thing I want to say.
Okay.
And during that time, there is a class action suit. You're going to love this. This was started in 1972. Lelia Mullaney, she's my girlfriend. She's in her 80s, late 80s. Lelia Mullaney says, you know what? We're not, women at City University are not being promoted like men are. A woman could be in the same rank for 10 years where a man will be promoted in 5. So guess what she does? See, this is not me. These are the people around me. Hmm. So Lelia has a class action suit. That's what it's called then. Lelia Mullaney et al. I'm part of et al. And all of us, all of us are part of this. Suing the City University of New York in the 70s. We get this Judy Vladek. She's going to take the case on pro bono. Guess what we had to do? We had to go, and they had to let us do this, to the human resources offices where they have 3x5 cards. Of us, there's nothing, there's no computers. We had to, like, have the internet. So we had to go with the 3x5 cards. You getting the image of this? Of every single person at the university, thousands, thousands, thousands. And all of us do it at each of our campuses. And it takes 10 years. We win the case. It takes 10 years. We won the case. Every woman at City University gets at least $1,000, each woman. But that's not the point. It's about changing. So we have a special master. Like what they have with Trump now, special masters are important people. They oversee everything. And of course it was in our favor. And then the university had to have.
Great, Gloria. We want to talk about your show and we got 4 minutes. So
good. The point is we won.
After 10 years, that's amazing. Amazing. All right. So tell us about your show see it.
Absolutely. You got to come, Hillary, because you're the only one close by. November 4th.
Yeah.
7 to 8 at Don't Tell Mama, which is an iconic club on 46th Street between 8th and 9th. You want to go to DontTellMamaNYC.com for tickets. It's $20 cover, and you get a CD included in that. CD, Gypsy in My Soul, which you could listen to on YouTube. And CD Baby and iTunes, it's all over the place, and then there's a $20, just so everybody knows, $20 cover, and then $20 two drink minimum, and it's gonna be great because
it's a one woman show, right? It's all you.
It's all me. It's called Gypsy in My Soul, an evening with Gloria Waldman. So really, what I'm doing is singing songs from my CD. Which is my first CD. And you know what's great? Like, well, I don't have to do more CDs. I could, but I did it. It's like, I'm a person who've been there, done that. I don't have to do it again, you know? So I would love you to be there. You're going to feel really happy, even if you go by yourself. Who goes to these shows? My people. So you'll sit with Hillary. You'll sit with my brother. You'll sit with my boyfriend. Everyone is everyone. It'll be great fun.
So they have to reserve, right?
Yes.
DontTellMamaNYC.com.
Absolutely. Because it's
November 4th.
Yes. It's
in my soul.
Yes, Gypsy and My Soul. And I would love you to be there. And you could hear me also on, as I said, on YouTube. I'm all over YouTube on Gloria Waldman, Swing Combo. Oh, I forgot to say, I have a 6-piece band in Florida.
Of course you do.
I have a 6-piece band, the Gloria Waldman Swing Combo. Oh, and this is before COVID. We'll see what happens now, but because I haven't been in a room. It's going to be fine. You can wear your mask. It's perfectly fine. Wear a mask.
So for that night, can they get there before? Is it like 7 to 8 and they got to leave?
Very good.
What time should they show up?
Smart she is. 6:15. There's food. There's food there. So you come early. They're going to open. They'll open the room at, I think they'll open the room. Sure, I should know what time they open the room. Come 6:15. Come like early, because then you could sit, you could eat, and then the show will begin. So yeah, I think the room opens at 6:15.
And would they make a night of it, or do they have to, like, at 8 o'clock, they got to go because there's a next show?
Oh, very good point. No, there's not a show after me in that room. Okay. Brilliant, Hillary. I don't know. She's so smart, right?
What can I say?
She has all the right things. You can hang out. Often there's a show and you have to leave. That's totally right.
Okay.
They
can bring their friends. They can make a night of it in town, you know.
Absolutely. You'll feel
46 between 8 and 9. So it's over on the west side, right?
Yes, it is. It's an iconic club. Everybody many famous people have started there. And I've done other shows there. And I've done a show called Wall to Wall Waldman.
Wow.
That was one of my first shows. And anyway, and you could look this all up on YouTube. You'll love it. My favorite show, one of them, Vida and Gloria. Vida, my girlfriend Vida, and Gloria and Vida, all that jazz. That's a show we did back in 2000-ish. It's a great show. Such a treat. And I'm available if people want to start a revolutionary movement or work. Oh, my final words.
How do they find you? Yeah.
Yes, please. Can I just call me? Call me. 646-591-6901. Because any other way, I don't even look at YouTube. I don't do anything. I just talk on the phone. So call me, 646-591-6901, Gloria Waldman. Of course, I'm on Facebook, but I'll never look and find you. And so if you text me, I won't. I'm just an example of unstoppable. No caffeine. This is natural. No caffeine.
Oh, my God.
This is waking up at 10 in the morning. Oh my God, we have to do this today. No caffeine. Yeah, it's just life. It's life. It's life. Making, whatever. Because I'm not going to say lemonade out of lemons, because my life has been great. And I've had lots of ups and downs, but I think Landmark really helped me to see this is it. And now what? What's the next right thing I can do for myself and for the world? So vote.
Thank you.
Making phone calls. Vote, vote, vote. That's my real message. We make the difference. No complaining. Go to the source.
Thank you, Gloria Waldman. Unbelievable. Thank you. Yeah, I think you're worth like 20 lifetimes. So thank you for sharing your amazing life with us. It's very inspiring.
Thank you so much for having me. Really, it's such a treat to see you have your dreams come true. Get real with Hillary. I love it. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. We hope you are entertained and inspired. Please subscribe to Hillary's newsletter. Go to GettingRealWithHillary.com for more freedom techniques and fantastic stories and links to other great stuff. And don't forget to tune in every week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio TV. And let's get real. Let's get connected. Let's get inspired and create that life you love.